Greg Beloy here. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in tonight. This hour is sponsored, by the way, by David Hatfield. His message, just keep up the good work, Mike. Thanks, David. We appreciate it very much. As you know by now, on Saturday, over 100 people were arrested in Chicago. The Occupy Chicago event that occurred in Grant Park over the weekend. Among those arrested were a couple of nurses with the National Nurses United Union who were there to assist in case anybody, cops, occupiers, anybody, needed medical assistance. These nurses were arrested. As a result of that, more than two dozen people in red shirts affiliated with NNU went to Chicago's new mayor, Rahm Emanuel's office at City Hall this morning, chanting, "Arrest the 1%. Now, one of the people arrested is a woman named, where is it? I've got it right here, Martise Chisholm. She said she and her colleagues were at Grant Park to offer their medical assistance and moral support. Nurse Chisholm said, quote, "We believe they have a right to assemble regarding the occupiers and the right to the freedom of speech under the Constitution. We see our patients suffer from the economic crisis, and we believe the only way to heal America is to address Wall Street." Joining us now from Chicago is Martise Chisholm, a registered nurse who was arrested Saturday night. Hi, Martise. How are you today or this evening?
Okay.
Oh, good.
Okay, I'm hanging in there.
How long were you in jail?
We were in jail for 23 hours.
23 hours. I'm sure they have told you what you were charged with.
I can't remember the charges, but it was a protest charge.
Mm-hmm. Like criminal trespass or?
Right, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
I can't remember.
That's usually what they get you with when you're using the Constitution, when you're practicing your First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble. Were you and the other nurse ordered to leave? Jan Rodolfo, were you ordered to get out of the way before the police arrested you?
Yes. At 11 o'clock, the white shirt Chicago police officers came up and told us that it's an ordinance that says you have to leave the park at 11 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do not leave or move your tent, you will be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, "Are you sure? Do you want to move your tent or do you want us to move the tent?" And we told the officers, "We believe that Chicago occupier have a right to protest, a right to assemble and freedom of speech. And we believe that this ordinance is violating their rights. And as long as the protesters are here, we will be here." So the Occupy Chicago protesters, they did not want to be moved. So we said we would not be moved. We will stand by the Chicago occupier.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, I would assume that you had some sort of medical equipment set up, or?
Right, we had a medical station tent set up with a first aid box with things to address bites. We had a first aid box
right.
To provide medical attention.
Mm-hmm. Did they?
And so at 11 o'clock, they, you know, told us that we have to leave the park because of an ordinance.
Right.
And then at 12 midnight, they came and said, "You have to leave." And then finally at 1 o'clock, they put this big light, like a ballpark light, and put it on the tent. And then they moved in on us. And so all the protesters surrounded the tent to prevent them from taking the tent down and to prevent them from arresting us. So they surrounded the protesters and us, and then maybe like an hour later, they moved in. They arrested the back people first, and then they went to the right side, the front. And then once they arrested everybody, they took the tent down, and we were standing, because we were standing inside the tent, me and Jan. Then they took the tent down, and we were just standing there, and it was people watching us get arrested. We were the last two to get arrested.
It's my understanding, Martiz, that human rights or civil rights is nothing new in your family. There's a story about your grandmother, I believe.
Correct. Okay, my grandmother, her name was Berdia Kegler. And in the 1960s, because I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, mm-hmm. in the 1960s, she marched with Dr. King. Dr. King and Mega Evers trying to get the black people in Mississippi to register to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so in January 1966, when I was 5 years old, she went to Jackson, Mississippi to give a testimony of being with a group. It was like three cars.
Mm-hmm.
She went to Jackson, Mississippi to Senator Robert Kennedy's hearing to give a testimony on them being denied their right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And on her way back, she was pulled over, and it was maybe six people, but her and another woman, they were murdered on their way back after giving that testimony to Senator Robert Kennedy. And as a child, I mean, because they let us know that you could die, but to keep the dream alive mm-hmm. and keep moving forward. And so at 6 years old, that's when I made it up in my mind. When everybody else was crying at the funeral, as a child, I didn't cry. I said I would continue your dream, mm-hmm. continue your fight. And so I went on to college and did everything. And until now, it looks like the things that the civil rights people fall for, that the American dream is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that it's my time, the nurse's time, to fight, to save this dream, to keep this dream from turning into the American nightmare. And on her way back in that car, you know, when they tell the story, my grandmother dealt with a lot of college kids, white college kids coming down there to help them. She would hide them in her homes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was too young to remember. So when I see these kids, it brings back memory when sure. she was doing it, when she did it. And that's why I'm like, they standing up for their rights. This is not the first time young kids have stood up for other people's rights. They're standing up for their right. It's the right thing to do. And our nurses, Junior, we believe that's the right thing to do, so we're mm-hmm. standing with them.
Is your plan, Martiz, and possibly Jan, I don't know, you can only speak for yourself, but is your plan to go back to Grant Park?
Well, I'm a registered nurse, so we get every other weekend off.
I see.
So this weekend is my weekend to work. I work PM shift 3 to 11.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't be able to go this weekend, but every weekend I'm off. My plan is to go back until we beat Wall Street and victory is won. I'm going to continue. As long as they're out there, we're going to be out there with them. And we're expecting to be a long fight, just like with the Montgomery bus car mm-hmm. fight. It's going to be a long fight.
And
we're planning on going the duration.
Well, Martiz, I respect you deeply for what you're doing. And is there anything that you need listeners to this program to do? Just support the movement, I guess.
Right. They need to call their legislation, because what our union is trying to do is to get Congress to tax Wall Street, because we believe that this economic
sure.
crisis, well, it was caused by Wall Street.
Sure.
And so we're trying to get Congress to pass a financial transaction tax.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're pushing. So once they if Congress passes this financial transaction tax, we could put money back into Main Street. And like I said earlier, the only way we can heal Main Street, we have to deal with Wall Street. And I know it's not going to be an easy fight, because I can see what the president is going through now. But if the people put the pressure like they did with the civil rights
mm-hmm,
movement,
mm-hmm.
And even with freeing the slaves, it's the people. So the people need to start moving. Join nurses, join the Occupy Wall Street protesters. And we have a movement to move Washington into the people's direction.
I hear you. Martise, thank you so much for joining us. I have the deepest respect for you, and I hope we talk again. Take care. Take care. Martise Chisholm, registered nurse. The hour. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, a right winger, if ever there was one. Oh, I know, he's supposed to be a Democrat, right? Said he has to enforce the law, as well as respect people's First Amendment rights. And, of course, the quick answer to that is bull, and I can't say the rest of it on the air. And Rahm Emanuel knows this. Rahm Emanuel is no more interested than people's individual rights than he's interested in, converting to Islam. I mean, it's just totally off the table for him. He's a corporatist. He was a corporatist when he ran the White House, the first couple of years of Barack Obama's administration. He's a corporatist now. That's another word. It's a polite word for fascist or capitalist in my vocabulary, maybe not in yours. But for Rahm Emanuel to declare himself all a flutter because he has to balance the laws of the city of Chicago with the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is a bunch of hogwash. And I know it, and you should know it. Martise Chisholm, who was our guest there for the first segment, understands that. I mean, there is a woman whose grandmother was murdered in her attempt, two generations ago, to work for civil rights, human rights in the South. And now Martise Chisholm, who is a nurse, is busted for trying to provide aid and comfort to people who are exercising their First Amendment rights. Aid and comfort, literally. Not sympathetic aid and comfort, although the National Nurses United is in favor of the Occupy movement. But literal aid and comfort, if called upon, because she's a registered nurse. If Rahm Emanuel or any of these big city mayors gave a goddamn about these protesters, they would provide some sort of first aid or EMT people on hand in case somebody has an accident, in case somebody has a heart attack. Keep arresting people. Just keep it up. This is what the whole idea is about. The arrests will continue. This movement continues to grow. And there are not enough jails in the United States to hold everybody that eventually will take to the streets. In Chicago, Portland, Maine, from Kathy in Maine, Mike, things are not as tranquil as they were last week with our Occupy movement in Portland, Maine. Around 4 o'clock Sunday morning, someone threw a chemical bomb in a Gatorade bottle into the kitchen area of the Maine occupiers in Lincoln Park, Portland. Luckily, the explosion and toxic gases did not seriously harm anyone this time. It's difficult not to jump to conclusions about who threw the bomb, as occupiers reported that before the blast, they saw the car circling the park, and people inside the car were yelling, "Get a job, and you're communist!" from the open window. They're Glenn Beck lovers, apparently. Obviously, hate radio. I said that part. It's not in Kathy's email. She says, obviously, hate radio is making its mark here. The police are investigating, but the police chief was quoted as saying that it may be a, quote, teenage prank, end quote. I wonder if the same type of bomb was thrown at a police station, if it would still be considered a, quote, teenage prank, unquote. Sounds to me more like a Tea Party response to our local Occupy movement. The local Tea Partiers are brainwashed into believing that they are not part of the 99%. They are blind and deaf to the truth, very dumb, and quite obviously very dangerous. Kathy in Maine. Well, this is, you know, this is the way it starts. You get people who are instigated by thugs like Glenn Beck, who hides in the safety of his studio, wherever he hides, a little snake. You get obese, hideous people like Rush Limbaugh, you know, the usual crowd, who start instigating, trying, because remember what they want. They want to see blood in the streets. That's all these guys are interested in. Blood in the streets. They don't care whose it is, as long as they're not theirs or their family, you know, their kids, their spouses, their whatever. But they want to see blood in the streets. They desperately want to see it. And truth be told, if this kind of action by the right-wingers continues, if they are continuously stirred up to the point where they start throwing things and committing these little acts of violence, there will be a response. You know as well as I do. The people in the Occupy movement are trying their best to emulate peaceful, non-violent resistance. But, you know, there is a limit. There is a limit.
Mike Malloy, turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by David Hatfield. Thanks, David. His message, just keep up the good work, Mike. Well, thanks, David. That's kind. Thanks for the sponsorship. Northern California clergymen and women joined the Occupy movement in San Francisco this morning. Monday morning in a march that went through San Francisco's financial district. According to the Chronicle, about 200 supporters of the Occupy movement marched down Market Street singing religious songs and waving banners, including some reading, "Forgive Us Our Debts." That's kind of cool. The march, which began around 10:30 a.m., made its way to Mission Street up toward Midtown. And they were... The slogans were addressing the split between the rich and the poor. Marchers handed out flyers urging the Bay Area's religious leaders to join in solidarity with the Occupy San Francisco movement. The faiths represented at the march ran the gamut from Muslim and Buddhist to Jewish and Christian. There were 25 congregations from as far away as Angels Camp in Calaveras County. Donna Allen, pastor of the New Revelation Community Church in Oakland, said she had helped organize the march after being impressed by the Occupy movements throughout the Bay Area. She said, quote, "We are speaking for the middle class and the poor. We are their lobbyists. We don't have fancy offices. We have churches and synagogues." One of the marchers, Steve Smith, according to the Chronicle, age 57, said, "I live in Danville. I'm a recent retired school psychologist, and I thought it was very important to give my voice to this. There's a lot of clergy here, but there's a lot of people like me, too." The marchers stopped to give speeches on bullhorns at several large banks, including J.P. Morgan Chase, office building on Mission Street, and the former Bank of America Center on California Street. They were greeted with honks of support from cars all along the route and the occasional heckler. Several police officers casually monitored the marchers as they made their way through the streets, sticking mostly to the sidewalks and keeping out of traffic. For now. Yeah, for now. Also, from San Francisco, tomorrow at 11 a.m. at the W Hotel, which is at 3rd and Howard, downtown San Francisco near the Moscone Center, 3rd and Howard, the W Hotel, anti-war, pro-environment, civil liberties, religious, and other protesters, including occupiers, will be demonstrating outside the W Hotel because Barack Obama will be inside the hotel at a $7,500 per plate campaign fundraiser for Barack Obama. If you have $7,500, you don't know what to do with it, and you want to attend a fundraiser for Mr. Obama, and you live in San Francisco, this is where you can go. Organized by many activist groups, they say they will protest the Obama presidency's, quote, criminal activities that people of conscience must denounce, end quote. Joining the protest will be World Can't Wait, Cindy Sheehan, activists ranging from Code Pink to Occupy San Francisco, and anti-war U.S. military veterans. And there's more here. You can, excuse me. You can get more information. SFBayCan'tWait.org or WorldCan'tWait.org. That's tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. at the W Hotel, 3rd and Howard Street. Inside will be President Obama, who will be chatting with people who paid $7,500 to come in and hear him chat. And also from the third thing from San Francisco tonight. Whoa. Tomorrow, also, the San Francisco Film Society is trying to get off the ground a series of called Behind the Story. It's a new collaborative series by the San Francisco Film Society and the Center for Investigative Reporting. Now, the first event is the film, or it's not a film. The first event is Under Suspicion, or is that a film? It'll be presented the first evening of the series, and it charts the development of a series of stories, interviews, videos, and an animation that have been produced by the Center for Investigative Reporting in collaboration with NPR to mark the 10th anniversary of 9/11. It says here the joint investigation uncovered that Department of Homeland Security programs such as See Something, Say Something, and the other one, Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting, have resulted in suspicious activity reports about innocent civilians, often without their knowledge. The investigation zeroes in on one location, the Mall of America near Minneapolis, where a large private security operation has questioned thousands of people, often passing their information on to police and even the FBI. Most mall visitors interviewed, excuse me, by the Center for Investigative Reporting and NPR say they were unaware that suspicious activity reports describing their encounters with mall security were shared with local police and could remain in law enforcement files for indefinite periods of time. Editors and reporters from the Center for Investigative Reporting will present video, audio, and animated content explaining the story behind the story and addressing the key issues raised. Now, this will be 7 p.m. tomorrow at the San Francisco Film Society New People Cinema. It's at 1746 Post Street. 1746 Post Street in San Francisco. If you can get to this, it's probably worth attending. Under Suspicion, it's the first evening of the series. And it charts the development of a series of stories, interviews, videos, and animation that the Center for Investigative Reporting produced with NPR. So check it out. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, 1746 Post Street, the San Francisco Film Society, that's tomorrow at 7 p.m., Under Suspicion. The whole damn country is under suspicion, isn't it? Write that down, okay? Because if you send me an email tomorrow and say, well, you know, it starts tomorrow. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m., San Francisco Film Society, 1746 Post Street at the New People Cinema. Okay? In Dallas, 24 members of the Occupy Dallas were arrested today outside of the Chase Bank when they locked arms in front of the bank and refused to move. Protesters and supporters, according to this press release, of the Occupy movement in that city entered the bank to close their accounts. Throughout the past week, several hundred people in the Dallas area have signed the petition requesting account closures. While others held signs and chanted slogans protesting the influence of corporate greed, two dozen protesters sat down in front of the entrance to the bank and locked arms. They formed a barricade three rows thick and ignored demands from police to move out of the way. After final warning, police began arresting protesters and took them to the Lou Sterrett jail downtown. Members of Occupy Dallas followed and sat outside the prison to await their fellow occupiers' release. You can get information about this at OccupyDallas.org. OccupyDallas.org. The Occupy Dallas movement began Thursday, October 6th. And from Sydney, Australia, right? A police operation was launched in Sydney late Saturday night, early Sunday morning to evict the Occupy protest. Yeah, in Sydney, Australia, had been taking place in Martin Place in the city center since October 15th. The attack followed the violent dismantling, it says here, of the occupation in Melbourne City Square on Friday and large police mobilizations in both cities on Saturday to intimidate the protests against social inequality and corporate power. In Sydney on Saturday, close to 1,000 people rallied in Martin Place in support of the Occupy movement. Up to 100 people were occupying Martin Place when several hundred police descended upon the site approximately 4:45 in the morning. The majority of the protesters had just woken up when they were instructed they had 10 minutes to leave. Police, including from the riot squad and other specialized units, were deployed to physically drag out people who refused. As many as 40 were arrested. At least 9 were charged. Protesters suffered a range of minor injuries as a result of police brutality. On the weekend, Liberal State Premier, capital L, political party, Liberal State Premier Ted Baillieu declared that the police, quote, had to use a level of force, end quote, and that, quote, they have done it exceptionally well, end quote. The Melbourne mayor and former state Liberal Party leader Robert Doyle denounced the victims of police violence as, quote, self-indulgent rabble, end quote.
Starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by David Hatfield. David, thank you so much. His message is keep up the good work, Mike. Well, it's very kind of you to put it that way. Also very kind of you to sponsor the program. Thanks, David. Susan is in Sunny Squim, Washington. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Mike. It's good to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Before we get started, I'd just like to thank you for recommending Helen Holler. I had occasion to get a gift for a friend, and they did up a really nice basket and sent it with a card and everything. It was just wonderful.
That's great. I'll tell you, that is one of the best sponsors I've ever come across, bar none. I've been at radio for 27 years. I love their stuff. Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I really like their stuff, and their prices are good, and
yep.
Really nice people to deal with.
Absolutely.
I wanted to talk to you about this recent bomb, a homemade bomb, apparently, that was thrown into the demonstration in Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. While nobody was hurt, I understand it hit a table and messed up some stuff. Would it be considered an improvised explosive device?
I would think so.
Well, in that case, under our new Patriot Act laws, shouldn't Homeland Security be investigating this down on a ton of bricks on those teabaggers?
Well, but the police in Portland declared it was just probably a teenage prank.
Oh, yeah? Well, if it had been a left-wing prank, do you suppose it would have been called a prank?
I don't think so. And, I'm being sarcastic, as you know. But, yeah, it should be investigated. Supposing this device would have blown up in somebody's face.
Well, somebody did go deaf for an hour or so from it. I mean, it was pretty loud, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is that there seems to be two standards going on with police work. In there have been cases where Homeland Security came in and federal agents came in when the police didn't want them to come in because of some rumor of Islamic terrorists or something.
Agitators.
So, well, when you have a domestic terrorist like this Tea Party person that's throwing things, I think maybe somebody should investigate it.
Yeah, I think so, too. I also think that folks like you and I should not hold our breaths until an investigation has begun. On the other hand, you know, once the occupiers start to feel differently about what the police are doing or not doing, I think the occupiers understand right now that the police are there for a dual purpose. They have the law to enforce, but also to in especially in New York, to protect to some degree the demonstrators. Now, I realize there has been violence perpetrated by certain rogue elements of the police department, mostly those white shirt bastards who seem to get a thrill out of spraying pepper spray in somebody's face. But I think the average cop trying to deal with this is fully aware. I mean, you know, when you become a cop, you don't check in your brain. I realize some of them do, but for the most part, you don't. You know, you just...
No, but I think on some of the part of some of the police, I think a lot of it is training.
Right.
A lot of the police training has been very militaristic lately, very militarized. And I don't think that they have the proper training in many police forces, not all, but in many police forces, to train, to deal with nonviolent protesters.
Right.
They
right.
come at them with the riot squad, with the helmets and the billy clubs and the shields in some, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we've all seen those
sure.
photos online of the cops lined up against people that are totally unarmed.
Yeah, I've been in that position. I'll tell you, it is creepy as hell when you feel...
It's intimidating, I imagine.
Yeah, when you see people coming at you in a line with shields and shin protectors and hoods over their faces, they look like a row of Darth Vaders. And they just march toward you, and your civil rights, your constitutional protections be damned. I would love to see teabaggers deal with that. Of course, teabaggers are cowards. They would never actively protest anything unless it's within the confines of a meeting where somebody from the legislative branch of government is trying to address their whiny-ass problems. But you show me teabaggers out on the street up against a line of cops demanding equal protection under the law or civil liberties, and I'll show you a scene from some movie on Mars. Teabaggers are cowards. They just don't do that. Right.
And they're bullies, too.
Yeah, so, well, that,
I mean,
it goes,
they
yeah.
came out with all their weapons.
Yeah, right. Everybody shows up.
If the cops had come after them with the shields, they would have been the first people to throw their weapons on the ground and put their hands in the air saying, officer, I'm not going to shoot you. Really? It's not loaded.
And that's, you know, that's kind of the point. I think as long as the protesters, the Occupy movement, the people who are engaged in righteous civil disobedience, as long as they feel that that sort of thing is not going to happen, that there won't be a homemade bombs thrown at them, it will remain peaceful. But at some point, and I think city authorities, I don't care if it's Portland, Maine, or San Francisco, or LA, or Chicago, wherever it is, city authorities have to be addressing this issue, because the potential as this movement grows and the freaks and the cowards start driving around saying, get a job, and then throwing things at protesters, the potential for violence, it increases exponentially.
There's also a panic element occurring in that Tea Party movement right now. They're starting to kind of wig out because they're being shouted down. They're you know, their voices are no longer number one, and they're starting to fight back. And if they become violent and the police don't protect the nonviolent protesters, there's going to be problems.
That's the truth. Susan, always good to hear from you. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Mike.
Say hi to everybody in the chat room, will you?
I sure will. Bye-bye.
Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Jim Taleb. Thanks, Jim. No message, just a sponsorship. Phones are open. 877-996-2556 is the number. 877-996-2556 if you'd like to join us here. Tim is calling from L.A., listening on KTLK. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. It's me, Tim, from L.A. in the chat room.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
Well, the reason why I'm calling is because I want to talk about the opposite of what Susan called about. LAPD is great. I mean, there has been no arrest whatsoever.
Right.
And technically, we're breaking the law because we have no permit to be on, you know, in the park in front of City Hall.
Right.
So LAPD hasn't come in and arrested anybody. They're just leaving us alone, which is awesome.
How long do you think that'll continue?
I don't know, but I'm keeping in constant contact with the union with LAPD, so hopefully for a while, which is a good thing. But there was a threat of arrest because Obama's here, but it isn't by the LAPD, it's from the Secret Service. From what I heard, there was a threat so that if we're 100 feet from within, you know, where Obama is, they will. The Secret Service will arrest him under federal charges, not state charges.
Well, I'm sure that there will be agitators who will try to do something with Obama there and then have the Occupy movement take responsibility for it. So I hope the Occupy movement in L.A. is fully aware
that, they are.
That while it's a good thing to protest Obama's appearance, you also have to deal now with the crazy bastards on the political right who are just determined, since they have no ideas, they're bankrupt, they're cowards, that they are going to try, apparently now, violence.
Yeah, because nothing, like I said, nothing's happening with in L.A., so they probably want to start, they probably would want to start trouble. I mean, look at that terrorism they had in Maine.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy.
Exactly.
But you made a comment a little earlier, I think in the first hour. What will happen when the occupiers can't take it anymore? What will happen? And I don't think it's going to be because of the LAPD. I think it's going to be because some teabag or some right-wing nut job is going to do something stupid, and we're going to have to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't like doing that, but you know what? I will, and I have a rifle. But I don't want to do it. That's my disclaimer.
No, I understand. excuse me. I think that is one of the worries of the of various police departments around the country is that I think they know in their heart of hearts now with this Occupy movement being as old as it is now, we're into almost a full month. And I think the various police departments realize that they are, in fact, dealing with civil disobedience rather than criminal acts. They are dealing with nonviolence rather than some other form of protest. And that I would hope that they understand that any violence that occurs is probably going to come as a result of right-wingers who just can't stand it. Right-wingers don't understand the tactic of peaceful civil disobedience. They're the ones that show up, as Susan pointed out, they're the ones that show up at town hall meetings with these goddamn guns strapped to their hip, you know. But as soon as somebody looks at them funny, they wet their pants and run away.
They really. But what I found really what I found was really cool was I read in online that Albany PD were ordered to remove Occupy Albany. They said, no, we're not going to do it because if we were to go in, remove everyone, there'd be a big problem. So they said they're not going to follow orders.
This was in Albany, New York?
Yes. And all the Albany and all the police departments and sheriff's departments should take note of what Albany PD is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was elated.
I hadn't heard of that one. Well, good for them.
I'll send you the link.
Okay, if you would. Because this,
yeah, well,
you know, this is for this whole Occupy movement includes working members of the police departments. You know, the average person that decides, for whatever reason, I guess, to go into a career of law enforcement, and they have to, you know, they have to work within union rules, they have to lobby, they have to make sure that they get a decent pay, that they have decent health insurance, that they have decent retirement benefits, because they are going to put their lives on the line becoming a police officer, and what they're being told by the right-wingers is they can go to hell, too.
Right.
So I would hope that the cops understand what's going on here, and in certain instances do not side with the authorities to have people removed who are not committing any acts of violence, who are committing acts of civil disobedience, but so what?
Mm-hmm.
So
Go ahead. You know what I really like was I heard Hartman say, I support my socialist police department, and you know what? I agree with him. I support them. They are the 99%. You are the 99%. We are the 99%. And we will win.
Right. I appreciate that point of view. Tim, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. As long as we have an understanding with the police departments. I know here in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, the mayor decided that contrary to what the police department wanted, the protesters could stay in a green space in downtown Atlanta until November 7th, at which point there is a city council meeting. I'm sure the mayor is going to toss this to the city council and see what they decide to do. But Atlanta historically has a police force that can get out of control, and I mean that. I'm not indicting all the cops. I'm not saying all cops are bad, all lawyers are bad, or all doctors are bad, or all radio talk shows are bad. But Atlanta has a reputation, just like Fox Terrorist Broadcast Network has a reputation. And the Atlanta Police Department, black or white, they have a reputation of looking at civil liberties. And I don't get this, because Atlanta is one of the cradles of the civil rights movement, but they look at this effort to obtain civil liberties with a little bit of a jaded eye. So the mayor of the city, knowing, I'm sure he knew, that the police were just itching to move into Woodruff Park in the center of downtown Atlanta and start getting rough and tough, all dressed up in their military outfits, to remove people who were simply... And I mean simply exercising their First Amendment rights. I just hope that the police realize who the enemy is. I really do. There is an enemy, and it's not the people in the Occupy movement. The enemy, you'll find the enemy in corporate media. You'll find the enemy, just like this Erin, what the hell her name is, just went to work for CNN, and first day on the job or whatever, starts making these crappy, nasty, smarmy remarks about the occupiers. And it's like, you know, I want to take somebody like that and take their job away, take away whatever money they might have saved or invested, strip them of their financial possessions, to take their house away, and set them in the middle of an Occupy movement and say, now, do you still feel the same way? Or are you willing to fight? It's just a shame. There are so many people in media right now, especially on CNN. I really don't get that. But there's so many people on CNN who are just being bastards about the whole thing. Just absolute snotty, patronizing, arrogant bastards. And I wish they would all just shut up. Why don't you guys go cover something important like the Michael Jackson trial? The hour. Phones are open if you want to make a comment or whatever. 877-996-2556. Eugene Weekly, Eugene, Oregon Weekly, in a June 16th report that's tied to statistics based from federal agencies and the National Center for Health Statistics, which is part of the CDC, has the following. 8 cities in the Pacific Northwest are experiencing a dramatic increase in baby deaths since the Japanese nuclear disaster. Despite media reports that the fallout is, quote, negligible, end quote, in the U.S. mainland. Now, what this means, who knows? But the report says... And it cites references from Counterpunch and from documents put together by Dr. Jeanette Sherman and Joseph Mangano, reports that documents the deaths after reviewing National Center for Health statistics from the CDC, but an increase of about 35% in deaths of babies under a year old in Boise, Seattle, Portland, and the Northern California cities of Santa Cruz, Sacramento, San Francisco, San Jose, and Berkeley. Also, the baby deaths in these combined cities average 9.25 per week in the month before the Fukushima meltdown and 12.5 per week in the months following the disaster. He goes on to say the infant death statistics are according to local doctors and federal agencies that monitored the Fukushima meltdown since the Japan earthquake and tsunami from March 11th. Local reaction to the recent reports that Japan's nuke meltdown is now linked to infant deaths in both the Pacific Northwest and California. The reaction includes a statement from Pacific Green Party spokesman Blair Bobbier, who said in the June 16th Eugene Weekly that, quote, nuclear power is dangerous under the best of conditions and disastrous under the worst, end quote. At the same time, of course, Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel has called on her country to, quote, shut down its remaining nuclear plants over the next decade. And ABC News Australia on June 7th said that the Japan Nuclear Safety Agency has more than doubled its estimate of the amount of radiation released into the atmosphere from the Fukushima nuclear plant. And plutonium believed to have come from the plant in those explosions has also been found in a town near the facility. The first time plutonium has been found in soil outside the facility. I mean, it is just astonishing what is occurring here. It's the BBC, a recent BBC report, said, quote, Japan's Fukushima city is to give radiation dosimeters to 34,000 children to measure their exposure from the tsunami-hit nuclear power plant. All children aged between 4 and 15 will wear the devices for 3 months, and data will be collected monthly. And this city... this will be occurring lies about 37 miles from the Fukushima Daiichi plant. And according to a BBC News report, the facility is still leaking radioactive material. Nobody wants to pay a whole lot of attention to that catastrophe. That I think that's obvious. Certainly, corporate media in this country wants to stay away from that. The power industry in this country that controls so much of corporate media wants to stay away from it. The energy industry, whether it's MSNBC or NBC or ABC, you know, it really doesn't matter. That's an issue that is almost verboten even to bring up. No matter how big the catastrophe or how extensive the damage from one of these nuclear catastrophes, it's best, apparently somebody has made the decision that it's best just, let's not just bother the American public about this. Let's focus on something else. Let's talk about something else, but let's not bring up this horrific event that occurred in Japan. Let's just not talk about it, even though there is an unexplained jump in the death rate of children, babies, actually, toddlers, on the west coast of the United States. We'll be right back. People might need some attention to it, like me. I'm too busy dodging through the fantasy. Here's what you get. You made your bet, you better lie in it. You choose your leaders and place your trust. And that life will be.
Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Jim Taleb. Thank you, Jim. A message from Jim, just his sponsorship. Thank you. In addition to the unexplained deaths of children along the U.S. West Coast, but some researchers or some scientists believing that it just may be connected to the Fukushima disaster last March, there is now, I don't know if you saw it on NBC tonight, a huge debris field. I forget how big they said it was, but it's massive. Millions of tons of debris washed into the Pacific. You remember the pictures. You saw the horror of that tsunami. Scientists at the International Pacific Research Center, University of Hawaii, have been trying to track the trajectory of this debris, which can threaten small ships and coastlines. And the new sightings should help the scientists predict when the debris will arrive. They're estimating that this horrible mass of destruction will wash up on the Hawaiian Islands in 2 years and the U.S. West Coast in three. And if you've seen pictures of this debris field, it is just astonishing. Astonishing. Now, according to members or crew members on a Russian sailing vessel that was on its way from Honolulu to Vladivostok, crew members aboard that ship spotted a section of the debris field. They gave the coordinates, and they said the radioactivity level is normal. The information and education mate of this ship said, "We've measured it with the Geiger counter. But what they're seeing floating, refrigerators, televisions, other home appliances, wooden boards, plastic bottles, buoys from fishing nets, an object resembling wash basins, drums, boots, other waste, all those objects were floating by this Russian ship. Among the most remarkable pieces of debris is a small fishing vessel about 20 feet long. It's just the first landfall on Midway Islands is expected this winter, and then it will continue. What misses Midway will continue toward the main Hawaiian Islands. It's expected to hit there in 2 years, then the west coast of North America in 3 years. If you have not seen these pictures, you need to go online and find them. It's just horrific. And, of course, the American nuclear power energy or industry keeps insisting there's nothing here to worry about. Warren is in Revere, Massachusetts. Hello, Warren.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Wonder if I can stay on with you for longer than 10 seconds this time.
Sure.
It seems like sometimes somebody's occupying the phone lines, huh?
Right.
Talking about, the Occupy Boston protest. this past Saturday, Noam Chomsky spoke.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to hear too much of what he was saying because the PA was inadequate. But afterwards, they had a pretty spontaneous march, and we went right through the Faneuil Hall Marketplace, right through the building.
Hmm.
The food court, you know. This is a food court. Back in the day when I was homeless, you know, I mean, I used to go in there and get stuff out of the trash, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know, it used to be that bad. And it was like a walking tour of all these places that I'd been, you know, down and out, you know, before this whole thing, this particular crisis began, because some people are still out there that I saw out there 10 years ago, you know, some people have been in a crisis for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes that gets lost, but we went through the north end down Hanover Street. We went through the business district, but it was pretty dead. And then it ended up where the second encampment had been. You know what happened there.
Right, well, the Boston police are not known for their restraint.
No, they're known for other things. Yeah, but I've been, you know, dealing with them for a good, you know, decade now, and you know, I've seen a lot of protests come and go. You know, because Boston's one of those places that's, you know, always had at least something going on.
Yeah, let me share with you, Warren, this little bit that was just sent to me. Occupy Albany protesters in New York's capital city received an unexpected ally over the week, the state and local authorities. According to the Albany Times Union, New York State troopers and Albany police did not adhere to a curfew crackdown on protesters urged by Democratic governor, I might add, Andrew Cuomo, and Albany Mayor Gerald Jennings. Mass arrests seemed to be in the cards once the mayor directed police officers to enforce the curfew on roughly 700 protesters occupying the city-owned park. But a state police joined the local cops, moved past the property line dividing city and state land. As local police joined the local cops, they moved past the property line dividing city and state land, with protesters acting peacefully. Local and state police agreed that low-level arrests could cause a riot, so they decided instead to defy both the governor and the mayor. A state official said, quote, "We don't have those resources, and these people are not causing trouble. The bottom line is the police know policing, not the governor. And not the mayor," end quote. So this is the one that Tim from L.A., this is a story that Tim from L.A. was telling us about. Warren, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate the report on Boston Occupy movement. Thank you. And what else we have here on this debris field? Yeah, you can go to marinedebris.noaa.gov and take, I mean, this is just, it's just astonishing. Just astonishing. Now, to add just one more level of fear and loathing for your program tonight, this is in Scientific American several months back, but it talks about the phytoplankton population has dropped about 40% since 1950. And of course, the phytoplankton are the microscopic plants that form the foundation of the ocean's food web. They also gobble up carbon dioxide to produce half the world's oxygen output, equaling that of trees and plants on land. So, I mean, every place you turn, we are being warned by the planet I know that's hard for religious freaks or right-wing freaks to get that. But we are being warned by the planet that unless we take drastic action, and how to do this with 7 billion people, probably three-quarters of that number are involved in elevating their standard of living, or so they think, and they're not interested in anything remotely resembling conservation of energy or this crazed death-dealing pollution that's going on. So how do you counteract this? This is the part where I get really, really scared, is that, sure, we all know these things are going on. Even the dumbass teabagger types, you know, it doesn't make any difference when they hear it, whether they believe it or reject it. That's totally immaterial. The fact is, it is occurring. Their opinion, to the contrary notwithstanding, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, teabaggers are, by definition, a very thick-headed, dumbass bunch of people. But the planet continues to warn us with the drop-off of or the increase in groups going extinct, the drop-off of various species on the planet, the global climate change that's occurring, this drop in phytoplankton from a report months ago. I don't know. How long do you suppose we can continue to ignore all this? That's the part that is kind of scary, folks.
Entering a flying monkey free zone. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Jim Taleb. Thank you, Jim. Jim Taleb is our second hour sponsor, and I appreciate it very much. I really, really do. Mitt Romney, who will probably be the Republican nominee for president, he says that he wants to allow home foreclosures to continue in order to help the housing industry recover. He told the Las Vegas Review-Journal's editorial board, Nevada, the hardest hit. What is it, one in every three, or is it one in every two houses in Nevada is underwater now, those that have mortgages? He told the newspaper's editorial board that solving the foreclosure crisis will require letting banks proceed against homeowners who have defaulted on their mortgages. New investors could then rent out the homes until the markets adjusted. That's your Republican nominee. He doesn't talk about saving the people who are essentially going to find themselves homeless or having lost everything. This miserable right-winger puts himself squarely on the side of banks. Let the banks continue. Matter of fact, up the foreclosure, speed up the process. Nevada has the country's highest foreclosure rate and the nation's highest unemployment rate. He said on a couple, last week during the Tuesday night debate, he said the idea of the federal government running around and saying, we're going to give you some money for trading in your old car. We're going to keep banks from foreclosing if you can't make your payments. He says the right course is none of that. Just let the markets work. Let the markets work. Is this son of a bitch on drugs? When have the markets worked except for the people manipulating the markets? Oh well, what am I getting upset about? My God, he's a Republican, and Republicans want to see the country destroyed. Just absolutely destroyed. Wow. Romney, huh? Oh, my God. Oh, this is interesting. I just got a photo here from Melbourne, from the Occupy Melbourne protests. This is from Paz in Oz. Here you go, Mike. One of my photos just after the pig bots had pushed us out of the city square and continued to push us out to the edge of the city to Trades Hall, where they would not dare step foot upon. Pig bot numbers in excess of 1,000 compared to us, about 500. Had to clear City Square because the Queen is coming tomorrow and the 1% don't want her seeing the rabble and spoil her afternoon tea. Cheers. Be the revolution. Paz in Oz. From Australia. Cliff is in Portland, Maine, listening on Sirius. Hello, Cliff.
Hey, Mike. Good to hear you always. I look forward to your show.
Well, thanks.
Well, I've been listening to your comments fairly regularly about climate, and I'm right with you there. I mean, I listen to some of these commercials on the commercial TV, which I don't like to.
Right.
I usually shut them off, but boy, when you have these, the standard large energy companies getting on there telling us how the tar sands are going to be so good. I mean, we've got to take hold of these airwaves. I can't believe it.
Oh, I know.
People are listening to this crap. So we've got this big protest, and I think the dots have been connected between the Occupy movement and the climate movement now.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up in D.C. November 6th, protest the tar sands.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get that out there. I have a feeling we're up to between 5,000 and 10,000 people going to be at this protest.
Well, this is the one that National Nurses I think it's NNU.
350.org.
350.org, National Nurses United, people who are interested in not seeing the planet die. There are so many organizations that are going to be present at this.
Yeah.
And it's in conjunction, I believe this is the one that's in conjunction with the G20 meeting in Cannes, France, where the French equivalent of National Nurses United will also be protesting and demonstrating for the same issues at the G20 meeting. So it's about time that these movements connected, whether they're in Australia or in Europe or somewhere on the African continent or South or Central America, these movements have got to connect. That's the only way that this is going, and it's going to take tens of millions of people demanding an end to this madness. I swear, I think about the what has been identified as a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. These are certainly interesting times.
We've got to get on the airwaves, Mike. We've got to grab hold of that commercial television. It seems like the big corporations have a monopoly on it, and on all the dumbed-down people in this country have to hear the other side over and over and over. We got to keep a full court press, so to speak, on the reality of what's happening to our climate until the population becomes aware of how serious it is. We you listen to these commercials.
I know.
You never see
one place,
our side.
One place to go to get some good television is Current TV. That's the network, of course, that carries Oberman every night. I think he's on, 8 to 9 or is it 9 to 10? I'm not sure, but you can find out. But Current TV has become a channel that I will spend some time watching. We got to take a break here. We'll be back after the break to talk about the insanity of Herman Cain. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. past the hour. If you need any reminding about the craziness of these Republican candidates for president, Parade magazine this weekend had a little bit here about Rick Perry. Now remember, here's the backstory. In April, Barack Obama released his so-called long-form birth certificate from Hawaii. Remember that? And, of course, Donald Trump, this this crazed, multiple, married, bankrupt, big-ass executive from Washington who thought he was going to run for president. You know, Donald Trump. Parade around the country talking about how, well, no, I don't know. And a lot of the right-wingers said it was Trump. Even Trump said this, that it was his challenging the authenticity of Obama's birth, you know, whether or not it was in the United States, that caused Obama to release his so-called long-form birth certificate. I mean, has there ever been a more childish, ridiculous issue than this? Seriously now, in your entire life, have you ever heard of someone who, regardless of your feelings about Obama's presidency, here's someone who has worked his way up through, I don't know how many schools he went to, all the way up through his postgraduate scholarship, all the different jobs he's held, running for the Illinois legislature, running for the United States Senate, running for the president. And all of a sudden, these Republican morons came out with this whole thing a couple of years ago that, well, he wasn't born in the United States. I mean, of all the issues that one could criticize this president or go after him, so to speak, this one is down there in the kindergarten club. You know what I'm saying? But there they are. There are all the Republicans all lined up with this. And this crazy psycho, Orly Tates. What a name, Orly. I'm sorry, but, you know, I believe in ad hominem attacks, ad hominem attack. It doesn't make any difference to me. Someone named Orly Tates ought to shut the hell up and sit down. But no. She was the woman who just kept stirring this up over and over and over. Well, he wasn't born in the United States. So when Orly Tates opens her mouth, you know, in this breeze of the stench of ridiculousness wafts over the political scene, I have to wonder, and I would imagine you would too at some point, where in the hell do people like this come up with this stuff? I mean, we know why. Orly Tates is a racist pig. That's all. That's her main motivator. A, B, she doesn't think Obama is pro-Israel enough. And C, she's Republican. Now, I may have the A, B, and C all messed up, but, you know, anyway. Orly Tates, the birther queen. So anyway, I digress. An interview in Parade magazine, Perry said he recently met with Donald Trump, and discussed the issues. Can you imagine that conversation? A half-wit like Rick Perry and a complete blithering moron like Donald Trump, they're going to sit down and discuss the issues. Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. Anyway, in that little sit-down, according to Parade magazine, Perry stated that he doesn't have a definitive answer, his words. I don't have a definitive answer on whether Obama was born in the United States or, quote, any idea if Obama's birth certificate is real. Now, here's a little partial transcript between Governor Rick Perry and psychopath Donald Trump. Not between Trump. I'm sorry. This is between Parade magazine and Rick Perry. Governor, do you believe that President Barack Obama is born in the United States? I have no reason to think otherwise.
That's not a definitive. Yes, I believe he. Well, I don't have a definitive answer because he's never seen my birth certificate. But you've seen his. Well, I don't know. Have I? You don't believe what's been released? Well, I don't know. You know, I had dinner with Donald Trump the other night, and that came up. And he said, he doesn't think it's real. And you said, well, I don't have any idea. It doesn't matter. He's the president of the United States. He's elected. It's a distractive issue. Oh, my God. I mean, it just goes on and on. Perry recently secured the endorsement of the birther queen, Orly Tates. She got that title because she kept filing lawsuits, asserting that Obama, until finally a judge told her get out of his courtroom, and if she came back, he would find her in contempt. I mean, people who suffer from a serious psychopathology, like so many of these people on the right, it doesn't make any difference how much time they tie up, how much money they spend. They're always right-wing vermin in this country who are going to back them, going to give them as much money as they want. Look at the Koch brothers. Doesn't make any difference. God only knows where Orly Tates got her money to file lawsuit after lawsuit until finally a judge told her to get the hell out of his courtroom. And Orly Tates told Think Progress that she believed Rick Perry will use the birther issue to attack Obama. I mean, of all the issues. This is, let me tell you something. This is why the Republicans choose these half-assed issues, because Obama is on the same page as the right-wingers on economic issues, on foreign policy issues, on these issues, that environmental issues. Obama's on the same page. I mean, how do you get to the right of Barack Obama when Obama believes that issuing permits, for example, one example, issuing permits to these oil companies to continue punching holes in the earth, continue the destruction, continue making the air harder and harder and harder to breathe. How do you get to the right of that? How do you get to the right of a president who refuses to do anything substantive to put America back to work? How do you get to the right of that? How do you get to the right of a president who refuses, utterly and absolutely refuses, to bring charges against these murderous right-wing bankers and mortgage grantors, all these people who have so totally screwed up the economy? How do you get to the right of that? Well, you don't. What you do is get into crazy land. You start saying, well, he's not an American. What? We saw his birth certificate. No, that's fake. Oh, I see. Something that was certified 50 years ago. So this is just one master plan, right? You crazy Republican bastards. 50 years ago, a bunch of people sat around. Of course, they're all dead now. But 50 years ago, they all sat around. Hey, listen, I'll tell you what. Let's work this plan to get the first black president of the United States elected. Now, first of all, we have to cover up that he was born in Indonesia or Kenya or someplace. Let's cover all that up. Let's pretend like he was born in, Hawaii. That's a good idea. Okay, now, let's hide all this stuff. So 50 years from now, this person who hasn't even been born yet is going to wind up president of the United States. OMFG squared. I've never, ever, ever saw such madness. But there's more. Wait till I tell you about Herman Cain. Stick around.
Three times.
night, truth seekers. It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, so Herman Cain, Godfather's pizza boy, right? The running as an outsider. I'm the CEO of a pizza company. Yeah, whatever. How's that going, by the way, that Godfather's pizza? Anyway, Herman Cain, he constantly talks up his business experience. He says, he's a problem solver. And he has no truck with Washington. You know, he's always been an outsider, right? As the New York Times reported, I think last weekend, Cain actually, before he decided to become the next president of the United States, Cain was that ultimate Washington insider. He was a lobbyist, an industry lobbyist. From 1996, when he left the pizza company, until just about 2000, Cain ran the National Restaurant Association. The what? Yeah, National Restaurant Association. Now, you don't hear too much about them. A once sleepy trade group that Cain transformed into a lobbying powerhouse. Now, how'd he do it? Well, he allied himself closely with cigarette makers, with the tobacco industry, because they were fighting restaurant smoking bans, right? You know, the cigarette industry wanted you to continue to have to go into a restaurant and breathe in somebody else's poisonous fumes after they had circulated through that person's lungs and bitten in and done whatever damage cigarette smoke does. Cancer, emphysema, COPD, bladder cancer, all kinds of cancer. And what Herman Cain believed, along with the tobacco industry, that if you wanted to eat in a restaurant, well, goddamn, brother, just shut up. Keep a stiff upper lip and suck in that cigarette smoke. He also, if that isn't bad enough, Herman Cain also, as the head of the National Restaurant Association, he also spoke out against lowering blood alcohol limits as a way to prevent drunken driving. In other words, there was a big move in this country a couple of years ago, you might remember it, to reduce blood alcohol from 0.10 to 0.08. As a way of determining whether or not somebody was too drunk to drive. And for the most part, that's gone into effect now. But back in the day, not that long ago, when Herman was the head of the Restaurant Association, he lobbied against that. He wanted more people dead on the highway. He wanted to appease the liquor makers. He wanted to appease the tobacco industry. And the people could go to hell. He fought an increase in the minimum wage. What? The National Restaurant Association? Well, of course. If there's an increase in the minimum wage, it means that your server, next time you go in a restaurant, might be making $5.35 an hour instead of $4.10 an hour, or whatever the hell the minimum wage is right now. But, Herman said, no, we want more smoking, more drinking, more road deaths, less money for restaurant workers, less money for everybody. Now, that's not all. He also opposed a patient's bill of rights. A what? Right, a patient's bill of rights. What a patient could demand and expect under the law, as opposed to a patient being utterly and absolutely helpless where it concerned whatever types of medical procedures were administered to that person once he or she put himself in the hands of a doctor and the confidentiality of that information. Herman, in other words, is a Stalinist. Not only that, but he wants people dead on the highway. He wants more cancer. He wants more poor people. And he wants people who have to get medical treatment to be completely in the dark. And this rancid son of a bitch wants to be president? And these right-wing teabag freaks just love his ass to death? Isn't that something? Huh? You're not surprised, are you? You're not the least bit of surprised to find out that Herman Cain wanted to continue smoking where people are sitting eating, for God's sake. He wanted to keep the alcohol level way above what it should be to constitute drunk driving. He wanted more dead teenagers, more dead fathers, more dead mothers, and this putrid little man who walks around saying, well, that's wrong. Your numbers are wrong. No, that's not correct. But Herman, 2 + 2 = 4. No, it's not. But it is. 2 + 2 = 4. No, it's not. Well, what do you mean it's not? Your numbers are wrong. You better go back and figure it. But Herman, 2 + 2 = 4. See, look, 1 finger, 2 finger, 3 finger, 4 finger. See, 2 + 2 = 4. It doesn't matter what you show me. It's wrong. You better go back and refigure it. Next question. This idiot? This sociopath? You know, I know you get tired of hearing me use the word sociopath on this program, but show me a Republican candidate for president who isn't. First of all, before you want to show me one, look up the word online. Go to dictionary.com, look up sociopath, and find me a Republican candidate for president who is not one. Small business.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you.
And doing talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Yeah, the rank stupidity is just astonishing. And the part that is even worse is the fact that people who support morons like Rick Perry or Herman Cain, or Sic Santorum or Michelle Bachmann, these candidates who have proven themselves over and over and over again to be ignorant of even the most essential facts required to get from point A to point B, that is, the cradle to the grave. And this is a part that astonishes me. How did these people ever make it through various schools? Now, I realize a lot of them graduated from these phony religious schools that have no basis in reality whatsoever. All superstition-based and lie-based all about invisible beings and this and that. Ah, I don't even want to go there. It's too close to Halloween. But you get all these candidates together. Some of them stand up there on the stage every time they parade these morons in front of us, and some of them have advanced degrees. Advanced degrees in what? How did that happen? How does the nominating process guarantee, in so many instances, especially on the Republican side, almost exclusively on the Republican side, that the candidates for national office are going to be these halfwits? I mean, really, really stupid people. And you don't have to adopt some sort of intellectual elitist attitude to identify them as stupid. They are stupid. They're dumber than hell. And their idiocy is bound and certain to destroy the country even further. You know, we need intelligent people now. We need problem solvers. Not Herman Cain, who calls himself a problem solver. Oh, okay, Herman, you're a problem solver. I'm an Eric Horn. You don't believe I'm Eric Horn? Well, you got your facts wrong, Herman. Jesus, God. But Herman Cain, a man who took over the National Restaurant Association in Washington, D.C. He wanted to go to Washington, D.C., according to the Times and a few other places. He wanted to go there because he wanted to, establish himself as a powwow player. And he wanted to meet the right people. That would be the people who are sucking the country bloodless and dry, people who want to destroy America. Herman Cain's just another one. The fact that he's a black man doesn't mean a damn thing anymore. It really doesn't. We are post-racial in that sense. We have white folk, black folk, brown folk, all color folk who are bound and determined at their own enrichment to destroy the country. They don't give a goddamn about the United States or about our way of life or anything about, you know, our, when I say our way of life, I mean, you know, the idea that you can, struggle and make it. Doesn't that sound quaint? Oh my goodness. You can struggle and make it. You can open up a little chicken shack on the corner and within 10 years you'll be Colonel Sanders. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Newt Gingrich, or I'm sorry, Herman Cain, they're all the same. Herman Cain, who, as I mentioned, aligned himself with the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company. Rob Mayne, M-E-Y-N-E, Rob Meany, an official at R.J. Reynolds, which contributed thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars to the National Restaurant Association for all these anti-consumer, anti-life bills that the National Restaurant Association backed. Now, think about that for a second. You know, you have your favorite little restaurant, right? You love to go there. It's a nice little place. If they have a plaque up on the wall that says, remember the National Restaurant Association, be careful. Watch your step. You have your favorite waitron. The guy or the gal who takes real good care of you, make sure you get good service. You always tip 20-25%, right? Because, be careful if it has a little certificate up on the wall that says member of the National Restaurant Association. Now, maybe they have changed, but back in Herman Cain's, under his stewardship, the National Restaurant Association aligned itself with the American tobacco industry to lobby to keep cigarette putrid, filthy, disgusted cigarette smoke floating in your face while you're trying to eat a goddamn bowl of chicken noodle soup, right? Here, breathe the smoke! Shut up, you don't like it. This is America, I can smoke and blow it in your face! What is it? Where did that come from? Where did that attitude come from? I can light up a cigarette and blow it in your damn face while you're trying to eat your soup and your salad. Where did that come from? And if you complain, well, you're being the jackass. You're being the prickly personality. Well, I'm just smoking a cigarette. You don't like it? Where did that come from? Huh? What freak invented that? But I digress. Herman Cain wanted to keep that going. Yeah, Herman Cain. Now, he calls himself a cancer survivor. No, you're not. No, you're not, Herman. You're not a cancer survivor. You're not. I don't know what your story is, but I haven't seen any certificate that says you're a cancer survivor. I haven't seen a diagnosis that says that you had cancer ever or that you're a survivor. I don't know. Donald Trump hasn't seen it either. Neither's Rick Perry. Produce the certificate, Herman, that says you're a cancer survivor. Produce it. I want to see it. It's a little crazy, isn't it? But that's an example of what these right-wing bastards are about. This is it. So, and Herman also wanted to make sure, wanted to absolutely make sure that people could go into a bar or a restaurant, drink their ass almost into oblivion, go out and get behind the wheel of a car, and God forbid there should be a blood alcohol limit on what would be considered drunk driving. No, we don't. It's America. I can put as much alcohol in my system as I want to. Keep your goddamn wife and children and husband off the street when I'm behind the wheel. This is America. That's the kind of America that Herman Cain and these right-wingers want. Now, according to Rob Meany, M-E-Y-N-E, the official R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, he said that Herman Cain was an ambitious man. You know what Mark Antony said about, was it Mark Antony who gave the funeral oration, who said that Caesar, some have said that Caesar were an ambitious man. If it were true, we're a grievous fault and grievously have Caesar paid for it, or something like that. So Herman Cain is an ambitious man. Cigarette smoke in your face, drunks behind the wheel. Now, that sounds like ambition. That's Republican ambition. Anyway, Rob Meany, Miney Mo, M-E-Y-N-E, you pronounce it, an official R.G. Reynolds Tobacco Company, which contributed handsomely. I love it when I see the word handsomely in a sentence like that. Contributed handsomely. What the hell does that mean? Contributed handsomely to the restaurant group. Rob Meany wrote in a 1999 email to his colleagues that Mr. Cain's presidential plans were, quote, not totally unexpected, end quote. See, yeah, he tried to run for president in 2000, Cain did. But it died in the cradle. Now, that message was found in part of an online archive of tobacco industry documents first noticed by the liberal blog Think Progress. Anyway, Meany, assessed Herman Cain's chances of being president. This is what the email said. Quote, nice to have goals, huh? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. He speculated that perhaps Mr. Cain wanted to be vice president or had a cabinet post in mind. Anyway, the email went on in Rob Meany's words. Nice to have goals, huh? In any event, Cain brings some positives. He is a genuine anti-government mandate conservative who happens to be African-American. He is a wonderful speaker and would be an effective and charismatic candidate. He is also good on our issues. On our issues. On our issues. Tobacco industry issues. In other words, Herman Cain was quite straight ahead advocate for more death, more sickness, more cancer, more poison into the body politic, more children turned into orphans, more moms dead, more dads dead. Go ahead, Herman! You goddamn killer, you! Go ahead! Keep it up! Keep it up! And all people ever wanted was to be able to go into a restaurant where there was no cigarette smoke and just have a dinner. Just sit down with the family and have dinner. But not Herman. Herman, you filthy, dirty man, you aligned yourself with the devil, didn't you? And you still do. The tobacco industry, the alcohol industry, you just want to see more dead Americans, more dead children, more dead teenagers. You're a filthy, filthy man, Herman. A filthy man, like so many of your colleagues on the right. You people are all about death and destruction. Every single one of you. It's amazing. Why? I still don't get it. Why Americans don't open their eyes and say, oh, my God. Everybody on the right is about murder and death. Every single one. I don't care what their message is. When you peel back the lies and the BS, it's about death. Every single right-winger is an advocate of quick, early death. Do it now! Kill him! Get him out of the way! I got money to make! It's astonishing. Nice to have goals, huh? We'll be back in just a second. Stay with us. So, Herman Cain, just another in the stable of right-wingers who literally want to pass legislation and do things that would destroy life, destroy civilization, and destroy the planet. You got to wonder where these people come from. It's like a Twilight Zone episode that just won't stop. Have you heard of... a Republican candidate for office, any office, but especially on the national level, who has in mind one single legislative idea that is truly, pro-life. I don't mean protecting a fetus. I mean life in a broader sense. Just one. And again, I've issued this challenge for 25 years. If you are a right-winger, a Republican, a neo-fascist, whatever you want to call yourself, a teabagger these days, I guess, just give me one example. One example of a right-winger who has an idea that would benefit all America. And possibly even the entire human race. Just one. One political idea. You cannot do it because every single Republican, especially running for national office, is at heart a killer, a destroyer, a freak, a sociopath, every single one. When Herman Cain took over the Restaurant Association, anti-drunken driving groups were waging a campaign to lower the legal blood alcohol limit from 0.10% to 0.08%, a change that restaurant owners feared would hurt liquor sales. Oh, poor babies, really? So the liquor restaurant owners, the restaurant owners, you all wanted, I'll tell you what will hurt your sales when people get drunk and leave your restaurant and go die, you dumbasses. So you decided that Herman Cain was your boy, huh? Of course you did. In an opinion article in his local newspaper, the Omaha World Herald, Herman Cain called instead for stiffer penalties for drunken driving. Oh, that works. In other words, now, this is one place where I'm more rigid than Herman Cain. I say the first time somebody drives drunk, there goes their driver's license for life. I don't care. Don't talk to me about it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. One conviction of drunk driving that is really, it can be proven that the person was drunk, impaired behind the wheel of a car, you lose your license to drive for life. The next time you're caught driving without a license because you've been restricted, 10 years in prison. I don't give a goddamn if you're 18 or 80. I don't care if you have a family to support. I don't care. But Herman was advocating for stiffer penalties rather than lowering the blood alcohol limit. So what he was doing was saying, okay, I want more impaired drunk people on the road. I want to see more people out there who could cause tragedy in a family, their own or somebody else's. That's what I want. Why do I want this? Because I am a right winger. That's why. A board member of Mothers Against Drunk Driving read that article, or the op-ed piece in the Omaha World Herald, and wrote, quote, Mr. Cain and those he represents are in the business of selling alcohol, not saving lives, end quote. Which is, true on its face, of course. But the two don't have to be mutually exclusive. I mean, you can go ahead and sell alcohol. You can go ahead and drink alcohol. And either be a neutral on the idea of saving lives or killing lives, taking lives. I mean, you don't have to have an opinion on that one way or the other. All you have to do is keep your ass off the highway. If you're going to drink, stay someplace where you're not behind the wheel of a car. Herman Cain didn't want that. Herman Cain wanted drunks all over the highway. He wanted cigarette smoke all over the insides of restaurants. He wanted to lower the minimum wage. He advocated against a patient's bill of rights. What does all that have to do with the Restaurant Association, you may ask? Nothing. Not a thing. What Herman Cain was doing was building his street cred with the neo-fascists in this country. That's what all of that was about. And now this unconscionable little bastard, the CEO pizza punk, stands up there and says, well, I was a Washington outsider. No, you're wrong on that. No, that's wrong. But Herman, 2 + 2 = 4. No, it's not. Go back and do your math again. But Herman, it really, I'm sorry, that's not right. Your facts are completely wrong. Those aren't facts. And this guy wants to be president? And people are already voting for him in polls and straw this and pretend that people are voting for this killer? Man. Oh, and by the way, under Herman Cain's wonderful leadership of the American Restaurant Association, the money that poured into the Restaurant Association to lobby for certain things, a tremendous amount of it, as I mentioned earlier, came from R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company. The, Mr. Maney or Meany, Miney Mo, the one I mentioned a second ago, the Reynolds Senior Director of Public Affairs, he served on the restaurant group's board. And Mr. Kane served on the board of Nabisco, which had earlier merged with Reynolds. Notice how tight these circles, these little circles are. Herman Cain, a real American right-winger who wants to be President of the United States. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.